welcome to episode 69 of Whiskey Talk from the Scotch Malt Whiskey Society. I'm Richard Gosling, editor of the Society's members magazine, Unfiltered. In this episode, we're taking a deep dive into the flavour journey that takes place every time we uncork a bottle of whiskey and then nose and taste it. It's a process that our tasting panel goes through with every sample that's presented for possible inclusion in a Society bottling. We caught up with tasting panel chair Kamie Newton to find out more about the different steps in this flavour journey and why we should take time to appreciate the complexities of what's in our glass. Before we get into some of the more scientific subject matter, I began by asking Kamie about how his own whisky journey began with the Scotch Malt Whisky Society.
When I made the decision that I wanted to come and live in Scotland, because it just felt like a natural home for me, it was actually Dave Broom that put me in touch with Annabelle Meikle, who was managing the vaults at the time. And so I started at the vaults, started on the bar there and doing events as well and doing tastings. And it became a rather wonderful landscape to be able to explore the nuances of flavour, because something that I really appreciated, this is back in 2011, was that for many people, flavour is this sort of like trying to grasp a cloud. You reach out to get hold of it, but when you open your palm, you've not really got very much there at all, and it could be quite confusing and overwhelming. So I began exploring different ways to investigate flavour and how to express that. And the Society was a really wonderful opportunity because we could start delving into colours and textures and weights and all these wonderful different components and sort of discover different ways of sharing and helping people to really express their experience of what's going on in the glass. I was working there about a year on the bar, and then focused really on doing the sort of the ambassador work, doing the members tastings up and down the country, and then sort of got involved doing the panel chairing as well. Being on the panels is a great experience, but when you're doing the panel chairing, obviously it's wonderful to be able to try and sort of put other people's experiences into words and convey them in a way that's sort of roughly easy to understand. But what it does, it gives you access to thousands and thousands of cask samples. You can really start to delve into the nuances and the really fascinating components of single cask whiskey, whereas the sort of the official bottlings are very much the official distillery bottlings. It's somebody's concept of what things should taste like, because they're marrying together different casks to keep that consistency, which of course you need to do if you're going to buy your 10-year-old whichever distillery bottling. You want it to taste roughly the same each time you buy it. But when you start in the world of single casks, you realize how much variation there is, and the breadth of flavors is a really exciting place to be.
Yeah, and finding the language, I like the way you put it, it's like trying to grab hold of a cloud. It's, we've all had that experience where you nose a glass and you're like, oh yeah, it reminds me of something, but I can't quite get it. What is it again? But, on the tasting panel, the job is to come up with something concrete, to find the language to express these very, very ephemeral or difficult to find, difficult to reach aromas and sensations.
Yeah, absolutely. And once you start delving into the psychology and the sensory psychology of flavour, you begin to realise why it's such a tricky thing to grasp. And I guess that's what makes me so passionate about the psychology of the senses and why we taste things. When a lot of people are spending their time focused on what is it that I am tasting, my mind is always going away at why am I tasting it? What is it that's happening that's creating this sensation? Because it's such an incredible subject, and it really is one of the sort of the final frontiers that's unexplored to a large extent. There's so much that people don't know about flavor and how it works. We're sort of nibbling away at the outside, but there's so much opportunity. It's incredible.
Yeah, because we talk a lot at the Society about flavor creation. Where does the flavor come from? Different aspects of whiskey production, which can influence the flavor. But the piece you've written for April is about the process of experiencing flavor. And it's, you know, what's interesting to me is you're writing about it from the physical aspect of how you process flavor and aroma. So, you know, give us a kind of overview of what that means, flavor as a physical process.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. There's a lot of research. You know, the Scotch Whisky Research Institute has got a ton of research that they've done into the molecular components of spirit and how maturation plays a role and how everything develops on a molecular scale. But the problem is that when we try and experience that, when we try and represent that in terms of words and images and make sense of it inside our head, it's a completely different world of science to just these molecules inside a glass. It's incredibly complex. And I think that because it's so complex, there's a chance that you can see it as a sort of mysterious thing that people kind of know a bit about, but then are kind of confused by a lot of it. And when you start to break it down and you see flavor really is a process, it's not this singular thing, it's a process of our senses that changes and it goes along. It just so happens that we experience it as a singular component in the mouth predominantly, because this is where we get most of the thing that we call flavor. But it becomes confusing because when we talk about taste and we go to a whiskey tasting, if it was just a tasting, all we would be really experiencing is the salty and the sour and the bitter and umami, and that would be it. But we don't have the terminology to describe it in any other way. There's no word that we have to describe the experience of flavor. We can talk about flavor itself, but the experience we can only talk about in terms of aroma and taste and touch and these sorts of sensory components. So it's no wonder that it becomes confusing for people, because we're lacking the terminology to a certain extent, but it is very much a physical process that we go through. We just experience it as something that we call taste, but really there's a great deal more to it than that.
Yeah, I think the point is that taste itself is extremely limiting, because you are just talking about the experience of, in this case, the whiskey on your palate, having one of only a limited number of tastes. So we've got to get beyond taste.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, really, really beyond taste. But like I say, that we don't have anything to really describe it with, because flavor is everything. It's all of our senses combining into one experience. So how do we describe that? And therefore the terminology becomes confusing, because we describe things as being tasty, but we also describe things as being flavorsome. Unsalted food we may describe as tasteless, so we add salt to enhance its flavor. So what is this? What is taste? What is flavor? These words are used so interchangeably, it's no surprise that people get confused. And certainly doing the ambassador work, doing the members tastings, this recurring question comes up of what actually is flavor. And some people have had a very good stab at it, but actually when you delve into it, it's so multidimensional, it becomes huge.
Yeah, and as you say, it encompasses basically all your senses, because every aspect of what you're experiencing with the whiskey influences how you feel about it. And I suppose that, you know, it's not just the whiskey in your mouth. It's like, you know, how does the bottle feel in your hand? What does it sound like when it pours from the bottle into the glass, or what's the sound of the cork coming out of the neck of the bottle? All of these things are, in their own way, having an effect on your experience.
Yes, absolutely. Everything. When it comes to flavour, everything has an impact. Everything. What mood you're in, what colours you're wearing, the setting that you're in. It's no surprise that when you eat seafood at the seaside, it tastes more maritime. You could have the same food somewhere else at home and it wouldn't taste the same. There's a wonderful experiment in America looking at the effect of white coats, just normal white lab coats, you know, that you'd wear in a laboratory. And they had three groups. One group wore the coats doing something called a Stroop test, where you have words of colors written. You know, they have the word red, the word green, the word blue. But the colors of the text isn't congruent with the word itself. So, for example, the word blue would be written in green. The word orange would be written in blue. And the task is to identify what the word says and not be influenced by the color of it. So it's a test, and you're tested on your accuracy and also speed. One group was wearing these white lab coats, and they were told that they were doctor's coats. The second group was wearing the same coats, but they were told they were artist's smocks. And the third group was a control group that didn't wear any lab coats, but there was a lab coat on the table in front. And through the Stroop test, it was evident that the people that thought they were wearing a doctor's coat scored much higher in the cognitive function in the test. And the people that were wearing what they thought were artist smocks scored the lowest in the tests, below the control group, just through wearing a white coat. And that's it. So even just the clothes we wear change our cognitive functioning, and therefore flavor is a cognitive function. It's no great stretch to understand how what we wear will also change our experience of flavor.
Yes, it's crazy. Maybe we need to dress up as whiskey ambassadors, and then suddenly we'll find the language and the, you know, all the chat to be able to talk about whiskey in a more confident way.
Well, this is the thing, isn't it? It's does Scotch whiskey taste more flavoursome if you wear tartan?
Yeah, definitely. Okay, a range of different outfits and taste the same whiskey and see what comes to mind, or how confidently we talk about it. Yeah, that could be a good one. But let's talk about this process a wee bit more, Kemi, because you're identifying, you know, the physical aspect of what's going on when we nose and taste whiskey. And, you know, most of what we experience is, as you say, is not to do with what's on your palate. It's more about what's happening in your nose. But the different processes of what you smell initially with the whiskey, and then what you experience once the aromas of the whiskey enter your mouth and come up the back of your nose. And these are kind of very different aspects of the flavor identifying process.
Yeah, absolutely. When we talk about taste, the majority of what people think of as taste is aroma, like you say, with the odor molecules traveling up the back of the throat. So if we take away all of the sort of other exterior influences on flavor, such as the room temperature, colors, setting, all of these things, and strip it back to sort of the core of what we experience, we're really starting with what we smell through the front of the nose. You know, the olfactory schnozzle that we've got is our first experience of the flavor. And this is what we call nosing. You know, when we're at a tasting and we nose the whiskey or we nose the wine, that's the initial experience of those odor molecules traveling up into the olfactory epithelium, where we have the odor receptors in the nose. And then, of course, we take a sip and we get the sensations in the mouth and the sense of the taste bud receptors being activated. But then, and especially when we breathe out, the aromas, the odor molecules inside the mouth are traveling up to the same receptors in the nose, but from behind. And this is called retronasal aroma. So when we smell through the nose before we take a sip, this is the orthonasal aroma, it's called. Then we take a sip, and then the aromas travel up the back of the throat into what we call retronasal aroma. So there's a sort of a three-stage process to it. And the really mind-blowing component is that the brain processes these different components of it in different ways, in different parts of the brain, process the different components. So the orthonasal aroma through the front of the nose is processed slightly differently to the retronasal aroma coming up the back of the throat. Yet both the retronasal and orthonasal aroma are using the same odor receptors in the nose, but they're processed differently and they employ different circuits in the brain. And how does the body do that? It's the same receptors, it's the same odor receptors receiving the same odor molecules, but the brain processes them differently. It's incredible. One idea is that the body has a gating mechanism so that it sort of the body understands when we're smelling something through the nostrils as such. And then when something's in the mouth, it switches like a gate, so that the same odor receptors are now sending the signals to a different part of the brain. it's mind blowing when you start to look at it.
But it's to do with basically initially the first identification is this a good thing, or could this harm me? Right, your brain is basically just functioning on that really basic level. Should I even put this in my mouth? Right, your nose is warning you or encouraging you, I suppose, whether you should proceed with this. So that's the kind of basic functionality of the orthonasal, but then the retronasal gives you much more of this is a pleasant experience. I want more of this. I'm enjoying what's in my mouth.
Yeah, absolutely, Richard. Because if you look at it from an evolutionary perspective, it makes sense. You know, before anything's entered your mouth, the senses have to identify what something is. So the orthonasal aroma is going, what is that? That's its job, and that's the pathways that it has in the brain. It's saying, what is that? And then when we put something in the mouth, the taste buds are there to say, is this poisonous? Like with your gag reflex, you put something in your mouth that's really horrible. It's natural just to eject it from the mouth if something's too bitter, because poison's often bitter. So that the mouth is going, is this poisonous? And then when your mouth has accepted it and said, this isn't poisonous, then the retronasal aroma, that kicks in with different pathways in the brain to say, how good is this? Do I like this or not? Shall we do it again? And this is where the sort of the addictive mechanisms come in with things like chocolate and desserts and, you know, things that you just can't stop eating. A bag of popcorn where you just eat the entire bag on your own because it just tastes so good. And that's the retronasal aroma saying this is brilliant. And it's releasing all this dopamine into the brain. And the dopamine really is the sort of the activation to do it again, to keep repeating. But it's incredible how these three components combine to create this sensation of flavor. But really, we experience it as one thing. We just call it taste.
We should put it to the test with a dram. I know you've got some society whiskey there. So I'm intrigued because, you know, we drink whiskey all the time, but we don't necessarily analyze it in this more scientific way. But we've got a sample of society cask 12.77. It's a mindful woodland walking, and you know, we obviously put a certain amount of information on a society bottling in terms of its flavor profile, in this case spicy and sweet. There's the tasting notes, which the tasting panel chair pulls together, and a bottle name to give you some kind of indication of what you're getting. But yeah, cheers with this one, Kamie. But So orthonasal first.
And here's a really great thing that I find with society whiskies in particular, is that you can change your experience even before you've added water to the dram. Because with these cask strength whiskies, that heavy amount of ethanol in there can really mask a lot of the other aromas. So you maybe don't get so much until you've added the water to it. But before you've added water to it, if you stick your nose actually in the glass, like we often do, and you get a big bump of everything that's going on in there, but you're also getting all of the ethanol, it can be too much. But I find if you hold the glass at a sort of a 45 degree angle, so the rim of the glass is at a 45 degree angle, obviously there's a top part of the rim. And rather than putting your nose actually in the glass, if you perch the tip of your nose on the very top of the rim, so it's not in the glass, but actually just above it, and then when you smell, you get much less ethanol, and you're getting these lighter, more volatile components, which gives you a slightly different experience, even before you've added water. And I find that really helpful for the society whiskies.
Yeah, especially, as you say, it casts strength. If you do stick the schnozzle right in there, it can be quite overwhelming, very prickly, and yeah, you're just getting a lot of ethanol. I mean, this is what, let's see, 58.3% ABV, so yeah, it's right up there. Yeah, but maybe I'm just used to it.
Well, this is the thing. We do become used to flavors, you know, whether it's chilies and spice, whatever. What are these horrendous cheeses that you get that is kind of like so funky? It's difficult to get it past your nose, or other delicacies that they have around the world. There's this fish from Scandinavia, isn't there? I can't remember the name. That supposedly smells horrendous, but when you eat it, the taste is quite good, and it's a really good demonstration of the difference between the orthonasal aroma and the retronasal aroma. Because while your orthonasal aroma is saying don't put this anywhere near your mouth, retronasally it actually smells quite good.
Okay, yeah, that's working up in the opposite way. You are getting a warning, but then if you decide to ignore the warning, actually there's a reward. So maybe even if a whiskey doesn't smell great, it might be great on the palate.
Okay. But it is interesting, you know, through doing the panels, you do get whiskies that smell amazing. You know, on the nose, they're incredible. But when you take a sip, that full body flavor doesn't translate into the retronasal aroma. It really highlights that separation between the two different ways of smelling. It's almost like we have two separate noses.
Yeah, you quite often hear comments that, you know, even in terms of a peated whisky, it might not be that apparent on the nose, but on the palate, then you really get it. That would be the retronasal effect then.
Yeah, and this is exactly why that experience happens. Vanilla is another good example, because the retronasal aroma is all about the feel-good component, and the orthonasal aroma is about the what-is-it component. Feel-good molecules are much more prevalent on the retronasal aroma when we've actually taken a sip. So things like vanilla and coconut, this is why they all come through once the whiskey's in the mouth, because it's really working that reward pathway. And it's fascinating that smoke does the same thing, that smoke is processed in our brain as a rewarding element, which I find fascinating, the way that we've evolved to really naturally, of course, broadly speaking, not everyone's into smoke, but broadly speaking, we enjoy that smokiness, but it's all about the reward pathways.
Right, okay. Okay, shall we see what rewards we get from this one on the palate? I'm finding it quite tobacco-y on the nose, actually, but let's see what it's like on the palate. Wow. I mean, that for me, that sweetness really explodes and comes up the back of your nose. I wasn't getting so much of the sweetness just on the initial nosing, but once it hits the palate, then it really explodes. And
the nose initially, it's much more straw-like and biscuity and summer meadows and sorts of, but in the mouth, yeah, you're getting all this sort of butter and toffee and popcorn. It's incredible. That's all aroma still. When you think about the tastes, it's all aroma.
Yeah.
But the other really big thing that we've not really touched on is texture as well. Like, we talk about whiskey so much in terms of textures, whether it's silky, velvety, oily, thick, viscous, chalky, creamy, gritty, burning, cooling. All of these things we use all the time for whiskey, but these are all sort of textures or things that we call textures in the mouth. But they're such a big component of flavor. And it's actually probably where most people start with their descriptive journey of whiskey. It's this binary decision of it's either rough or smooth. You know, when you give someone a whiskey who's maybe not really drunk much whiskey, they're not used to dissecting the senses, to them it's either rough or smooth, and that's how you tell the difference between good and a bad whiskey. I mean, but they're both textures.
They don't tell you very much about the overall experience, but yeah, they become kind of shorthand for good or bad.
The wonderful thing with the textures is that it's the experience of the whiskey in the mouth touches on senses that we don't even have words for. I mean, this is how undiscovered a lot of flavor is. We don't even have words for some of these sensations. You know, we have things like chemathesis, which is your chemical reaction to things, you know, with things like acid or sugars, and you know how they're chemically reacting in the mouth. And then we have the sort of the haptic perceptions of touch, you know, like in the same way we have touch in the fingers, we have the same in the mouth, and thermoception reacting to heat. But there's all these other receptors that do crazy things. For example, we have the receptor for chilies called the TRPV1 or the TRPV1 receptor, which is the one that lights up when you eat chilies, and also ethanol. Also, interestingly, tarantula venom. So I'm told it's the same receptor for ethanol as tarantula venom. But all these different things, and we have receptors in the mouth for menthol, for that cooling sensation that actually you get quite a lot of in whiskey. You know, often we get peppermint, menthol, mint chocolate, mint chocolate ice cream, all these things. Again, it's a different receptor in the mouth, but we don't really have words to describe what kind of senses these are. They're just receptors in the mouth.
Yeah, it's really, which is why the tasting panel then ends up going on flights of fancy to try and capture some aspect of this experience.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And we even have all these receptors. They're not just in the mouth, they're in the throat. We have them in the stomach as well. We actually have taste buds and taste receptors in our stomachs that are sending all this feedback to the brain. It's such a complete system.
Crazy. Okay, we could drink a lot of whiskey, Jamie, but let's move to a different style. There's a peated whiskey here, the 138.17. It's called Smoky Meringue Tang. So a completely different flavour profile. It's also not even a Scotch whiskey. It's from Taiwan, but, you know, does that make any difference? I mean, you've done a lot of work with blind tastings as well, so, you know, we've spoken a lot about whether the location of the whiskey really matters in this day and age. But anyway, this is a whiskey from Taiwan. So obviously very different on the nose. Your nose clearly identifies, you know, I'm getting just a kind of a burnt meat, maybe, kind of a charred note there.
Yeah, it's very much on the charred, sort of sooty charcoaliness, isn't it, rather than actual bonfires.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't smell that woody to me. Maybe slightly medicinal in terms of the kind of iodine, maybe a touch of that. But yeah. But my nose is telling me this is good. I'm going to experience pleasure from drinking this.
Pass the first test.
Yeah, definitely. Pass the first test, right. I'm going to go in with the palate.
When you start to think about all the receptors in the mouth.
Yeah.
And you start to realize all those tingly sensations, everything that's going on in there, this real journey as it changes. You're getting the tingle from the ethanol, and then you're getting some sweetness and all that sort of juiciness going on in there as well. It becomes quite juicy towards the end. All these different receptors just in the mouth being stimulated. And when you breathe out through the nose, all that, the smoke comes in. It fills your head. It wasn't actually there before.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's why we, even without getting into the science of it, we quite often on the panel at least talk about taking time with a dram so that you can really appreciate all of these things that are going on. You know, it's not necessarily a scientific analysis, but you still know, oh, there's a lot happening here, so I should take my time to sit and appreciate it. This is not whiskey for, you know, I think it says it on most of our bottles, this is not whiskey for glugging or knocking back. Not only because that's not great for your health, knocking back cask-strength whiskey, but because it's complex and there is so much going on that you need to take the time to kind of, not necessarily analyse it, but just enjoy the multifaceted experience of what's happening.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the time, particularly with these very powerfully flavored whiskies, you sort of need to introduce yourself with it first, rather than going steaming in there. Sometimes you need to take your time. You know, it's like going on a first date. You sort of you don't just dive in and 5 minutes. That's all the information I need. You know, you sort of get to know each other.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that was kind of how I was thinking about rounding it up, Kami, in terms of what our members, what listeners to Whiskey Talk can take away from it, in terms of obviously understanding more about what's happening in the process of flavour, the complexity of the process, but from a practical point of view, how to use that information to get the most out of their society whiskey. Okay, any whiskey, but we're talking about society whiskey here, which means, you know, there's a constant variation in terms of which whiskeys they're experiencing. So you're getting a kind of constant workout in terms of analysing the flavours and enjoying different experiences. But, you know, what would you say about how to approach your whiskey from this point of view?
Yeah. So I think the big thing, as we've discussed, is understanding that flavour is a process. It's not a singular event. And when you smell something, when you're nosing the whiskey first off, it's going to be different than when it's in your mouth, because the senses work differently in that way. Even though it's still aroma, the brain is processing it differently. So just be cognizant of that. Understand that the smell orthonasally through the nostrils is going to be different to that smell in the back of your throat when you're taking a sip. But also, I think, take time to understand the sensations in the mouth rather than just accepting it for either being how hot or spicy it is or how mild it is. Really think about the different things that are going on to do with the tannins and the bitterness and sweetness and sourness and how it changes and evolves in the mouth before you move on to the retronasal aroma and breathing out through the nose. And if you really want to prove it to yourself how these things work, just pinch your nose and keep hold of your nose and then take a sip and think about what you can actually taste. And you realize it is all sensation predominantly. It's only when you release the nose and then breathe out through the nose that you're getting that flavor come back. But I think for a lot of people, it can be quite overwhelming, particularly with single cask whiskies, because you're getting so much flavor happening at once. And there is this sense that people don't want to get it wrong, you know, especially the tasting, a large tasting, and the ambassador saying, oh, what does this taste like? And what are you getting? And there can be this fear that you don't want to say the wrong thing, especially when people around you are saying one thing and you think you're smelling something completely different. So I think it's really important to understand that we are all unique and we do experience things differently. Research has demonstrated how, in terms of our odor receptors that are on their own, we all have about 30% difference in the odor receptors that we have. So the makeup of how we experience aroma is a 30% difference on average between everybody. So this is why we all just experience things differently. It's like the coriander thing. You know, for some people, coriander tastes soapy, and that's because of genes. They just change how we experience things. So I think understand that it's a process. Enjoy the process, get involved with the process rather than it being a singular event. But also understand that because everybody's so different, it's going to taste different to different people. And that's totally fine. It's normal. So just because you may not agree with the person next to you doesn't mean there's a right or wrong, because you've got different genes.
Yeah. Brilliant. Okay. Kami, I could drink a lot more whiskey with you, but I'm going to have to call it a day just now. But you've opened my mind to lots of different aspects of what's going on when we drink our whiskey. So absolutely fascinating to pick your brains. I encourage everyone also to check out your piece in the April issue of Unfiltered, which really delves into this in more detail. But really good to catch up and share a dram and you know, delve into this whole world. So thanks very much. I appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Richard.
Cheers, Kemi. It's been a pleasure.
All the best.
As I mentioned, you can read Kemi's piece on the fundamentals of flavour in the April issue of the Scotch Malt Whisky Society's members' magazine, Unfiltered. We produce it every month for our members around the world, so if you haven't signed up yet, visit your branch's local website and come on in. That's it for this episode of Whisky Talk. Until the next time, cheers.